Good morning, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. At 11 o'clock, stay tuned to KBOO for The Dirt Bag. Today, host Glenn Andreessen and guest Jim Gilbert want to hear about your gardening experiments this year, and they will share some of their own, including Jim's Seaberry breeding program. Eric Cascadia is off today. Instead, we go now to Flashpoints after just a little bit more music. KBOO Portland.
Today on Flashpoints, we revisit the issue of police brutality as tension grows following the one-year anniversary of Mike Brown's murder in Ferguson, Missouri. Next, we cover protests in Japan following a decision by the Japanese government to reactivate the first nuclear power plant since the Fukushima disaster in 2011. Then, as Secretary of State John Kerry heads to Cuba to open the U.S. Embassy there, we discuss the future of U.S.-Cuban relations. Finally, we continue our coverage of Syria as talks between Russia and Saudi Arabia take a new turn due to disputes over the future of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. I'm Kevin Pina, filling in for Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoint, your daily investigative news magazine. Stay tuned. And you're still listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Now we turn our attention back to Ferguson, St. Louis, Missouri, where there are more protests and more arrests. And we hear now that there are heavily armed members of a controversial right-wing patriot group called the Oath Keepers turning up now. And of course, Ferguson was the site of the shooting of young Michael Brown on August 9, 2014. We are now joined by Uncle Bobby Cephas. He is the uncle of Oscar Grant. Oscar Grant was shot by a BART police officer January the 1st, 2009. Uncle Bobby, welcome to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Well, thank you again for having me, Kevin.
What are you thinking about all this? The protests have begun anew. We hear that there was another shooting just 2 days ago of another young black man in Ferguson in St. Louis, Missouri.
Well, you know, of course, as a family member who have suffered the harm of police terrorism and the murder of my nephew, and what I've seen across the country when supporting family, that, you know, when we talk about what just happened in Ferguson with a young man being shot, by the police, the first question we have to ask was he a police officer in uniform or was he undercover? And of course, from what I understand, he was undercover. Then the next question is, did the young man even know that he was a undercover police officer or not? And did he really have a gun, as alleged? So we do know, you know, and just it's proven itself over and over and over that police lie. And because of that, this undercover agent that shot this young man most likely shot a young man that was unarmed. And not only that, the young man was even unaware that he was probably even having a conversation with an undercover cop.
And now, of course, we know that the situation seemed to have escalated again with a response by demonstrators and then an equal response by law enforcement. It seems like the cycle continues to go on. And now, of course, you're in touch with many families of victims of police violence, not just the case of Oscar Grant, but the case of many others. I know this. What are you guys doing now? Are you guys working together? Are you now speaking with a single voice? Are you coordinating your activities out there in order to support those groups that are now fighting to end police violence?
Well, I would say, of course, today now there's much more of a coordinated effort that's being brought about by families all across the United States. You know, we help begin to connect the dots, you know, and just embracing families, you know, loving these families. And so many families now that have come into the circle realize that even in their own community, in their respective community, there are families that have also lost loved ones that haven't been recognized. And so those families are embracing those families, and then those families together begin to address and speak on the issue concerning what it could take to help save another family from experiencing the harm and the pain. I believe overall, when we talk about our connection with families, is that we're all beginning to now begin to focus in a unified way. What is it that we can do to help bring about change? You know, or even help uplift the movement that has taken place in regard to police terrorism. So no more do you see families just trying to take this all by themselves. They're actually reaching out across the country to other families and getting the knowledge, the understanding, and what it is that they could possibly do to help, you know, find ways to save another family from experiencing the same pain and, you know, losing a loved one at the hands of, again, at these rogue police officers that exist within this system.
And that's the voice of Uncle Bobby Cephas. He's the uncle of Oscar Grant, who was killed on January the 1st, 2009 by a BART police officer. He represents the families of victims of police violence, many of whom have begun to organize among themselves. Now, I'm curious, what is your view now of the Black Lives Matter movement? Where is it now? Where do you see it going?
Well, okay, first, my view is that I am ecstatic. You know, I am extremely happy that the Black Lives Movement has garnered not just the support, but the fact that they have come in alignment in dealing with this issue when it comes to family losing a loved one. So I personally believe that the Black Lives Matter movement is filled with young people that are unafraid and that have taken a look at historically what has happened in the past and has concluded that anything in similar ways of the past is not going to work, which we have seen over and over and over. You know, the simple passing of simple legislation does not resolve the issue concerning Black lives. You know, the simple adding of police cameras does not, you know, resolve the issue concerning Black lives. The Black Lives Matter movement realized that it's going to take much more of a deeper social change that is going to have to bring the lives of Black people to existence. And that is that, you know, not just simply addressing these small training and bias training, but addressing the Peace Officers Bill of Rights, addressing the Congress that passed this legislation to allow police officers to not be held accountable. I personally see that as one of the essence that has to be attacked. Once this legislation is removed, you know, or finding the political people that can help remove it, then I believe the essence of the Black Lives Matter movement will begin to really show its strength in that respect.
Well, Uncle Bobby, why don't you give us a little bit more about what this Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights is?
Well, you know, from the top of my head, if I remember correctly, it was passed, I believe, in 1976 or between 72 and 76. And it was ideally to protect police officers. But over the decades of time, California, for example, has the most strictest Peace Officer Bill of Rights legislation in place, which means that any time a police officer shooting takes place, only a judge can actually rule whether something in that police officer's official personal folder can be utilized in the criminal proceeding. And because this is system really is designed, I say, is a racist criminal justice system. In other words, judges protect police officers as well as district attorneys protect police officers. No judge rules that the police officer's official personal folder is to be totally given to the defense attorney or the attorney that is representing the family. I should say, unconfused what I just said first. The judge will deny most of the time, if not all the time, the official personal folder of a police officer that has been charged in a criminal act, thereby not allowing the public nor the defense the agent that is pursuing charges against the police officers to write to reveal to the world the history of this police officer. And so because of this legislation, many officers can get away with 5, 10, 15 or 20 police brutality claims against them. Not only that, 2 or 3 shootings against them. And the best example I can give from personal experience is Johannes Mesley in the pursuit to reveal his history of misconduct against African-American young men in our trial.
Johannes Messerly was the BART police officer who shot and killed your nephew, Oscar Grant, on January the 1st, 2009.
Right. And we sat in there and we listened to the argument to reveal his history, which was denied because the judge claimed that it would incriminate Johannes Messerly. Well, if he has a history of abuse of young black men, four of them to be exact, prior to the killing of Oscar Grant, to me was the direct denial of our rights to true justice. And not only that, allowed a person like Johannes Messerly to continue in his work without impeding him before he murders someone. Had that history been addressed prior to the murder of Oscar Grant, Oscar could still be living today. Many of these officers that have one or two shootings under their belt, especially in these recent ones, has a history of police terrorism. And yet it can't be revealed in the trial before the jury, thereby allowing the actual families to get real justice. So this Peace Officer Bill of Rights legislation is critical in transparency. As long as it exists, there will never, ever be any real transparency. I don't care what kind of training these officers get, implicit bias training that they have, or even the fact that they have cameras on their bodies. They cannot be held accountable if we cannot review what their history and conduct is like.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and that's the voice of our guest, Uncle Bobby Cephas. He's the uncle of Oscar Grant. I'm also wondering, you're describing clearly what is systemic injustice, that it is a system that is stacked in favor of police officers who will use violence first without asking questions, particularly against youth of color, black and Latinos. But I'm wondering, what about the political system? Now, we've seen that Black Lives Matter were critical of Bernie Sanders, for example, and now Bernie Sanders has allowed them to open up his Los Angeles campaign stop. So we see that there is this move now to involve the movement in a political direction insofar as the presidential race and the outcome of it. Do you see that as a viable avenue now?
I would say yes, because what it exposes from the political aspect is that most political figures understand the police union and the prison guard union lobbyist power. And because of this power that they have, they're less apt to address anything that becomes confrontational against these particular unions. And so the Black Lives Matter movement must challenge these political figures, especially these that are running for the president of the United States, on this issue concerning where their position is at and where they at when it comes to understanding police terrorism in our community. Because it exposes to them, or at least exposed to us, who they really are. And the lack or inability to address issues concerning Black Lives Matter and police terrorism tells us that these particular political people or persons are not really interested in challenging the police union and their lobbying power.
Finally, where do you think the families of the victims are going to go from here? Are you guys going to link up more closely with Black Lives Matter in the future? Are we going to see more of those voices emerging within the movement?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, for an example, on 10-10-2015 in Washington, D.C., the Minister Louis Farrakhan has called for justice or else. You know, now, else can be interpreted any kind of way people want to interpret it. But the fact is, as Frederick Douglass said, power can seize nothing without a demand. It never has and never will. And so it else has to be attached to not just justice, but the fact that we have power behind that justice. And families understand today that no one family can do this alone. And so families are coming up under this one umbrella, speaking to the injustices so that our voices can be heard, not just here in the United States, but around this world and the crimes that are being perpetrated on these families. Because as you know, and the listeners know, 95% of the families, if not 98% of the families, do not ever get any form of justice. Their loved one is just killed. The officer is justified in the shooting, even though the loved one was unarmed, a great student in school, wasn't confrontational, just was perceived as if he was threatening and then was killed. And so there's a lot to be said about what's going on and what's happening, but I firmly believe that families today are becoming much more politically aware of the inability for the criminal justice system to properly give them their just day in court. And because of that failure, families has come to believe that this system, especially this criminal justice system, will not act in their rights to some form of real justice. You know, I was just in Ferguson with the Michael Brown family, you know, spent the whole weekend with him. During the vigil, of course, the prayer vigil, just the whole weekend, and feeling the people. The community has embraced that family, you know, have showed tremendous love for that family and are utilizing their right, their First Amendment right, to speak to the very injustice of what happened to Michael Brown. But not only that, they want something done, you know, that is right. And the Department of Justice, as we know, has exposed the racism that exists within Ferguson and throughout St. Louis in itself. However, the people are clear. The community is clear. The Black Lives Matter movement is clear that nothing is going to change without some form of action. And so these actions are going to continue to be persistent and very demanding in real structural change, because we're clear, the community is clear, that no black life